All right, well, good morning, almost afternoon, and I realize I am what's standing between you and lunch, so I will attempt to do this adequately, but not take more time than I'm allocated. So this, I'm going to talk to y'all today about a fall prevention curriculum for community health workers. Just a show of hands, is everyone familiar with the community health worker model? Pretty much. So there's, it seems like several are. And I use the word promotora interchangeably because in Texas we use those words to mean the same depending on the population you're working with. I know in some places that's not the case, but when I say promotora, I mean community health worker and vice versa. And just to acknowledge my colleagues, this really is a collaboration. This project came a result of a Prevention Research Center special interest project that's funded by the CDC. And this particular project was done by the PRC at Texas A&M and the University of North Carolina. And those are my colleagues there listed. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And I'm going to skip the learning objectives, but basically I'm going to talk about what are the best practice models and methods that we use to develop this curriculum and then kind of the process. So we know that falls are a problem among older adults. We have evidence-based practices, and we know that falls are a threat to their lives, their independence, their health. Every 18 seconds, an older adult goes to the ED from a fall. Every 35 minutes, one dies as a result of a fall. And when they fall, they can develop a fear of falling or already have a fear of falling, and that in turn causes them to limit their activities leading to a fall. So it's kind of this cyclical process. And despite that we know these best practice models and things, they're still happening. And so we started looking at, okay, what can we do to kind of bridge this information gap? There's a lot of things out there that are great, but what can we do to augment this and what might be a better venue? And so in Texas and in North Carolina, we started looking at this, and community health workers are very prevalent in Texas. We have over 2,000 community health workers that are certified. So if I don't know if y'all are aware or not. So my background is in community health workers, and I deal a lot with this. And in Texas, we have certification of community health workers via experience. So if you have 1,000 hours as a documented working as a community health worker, you can become certified, or you can take a 160-hour certification course. So there's two ways in Texas, and then there's a process. One of those ways you apply to the state, and then there's a continuing education requirement where you have to have 20 hours every 2 years. And so community health workers are the frontline community health workers. They're frontline public health workers. They typically share characteristics of their population. They're from within that population. They share socioeconomic similarities. They're usually of the same ethnic and gender background, and then they're usually actually from within that neighborhood. So when we look at community health workers, we really try to recruit from the community, and they self-identify themselves. They may not call themselves a community health worker, but they have a desire to help their community, and they have the natural attributes that make community health workers great. So why do you utilize community health workers in fall prevention? Well, the bottom line is they interact with community health older adults every day, right? So even if they're doing something with maternal and child health, particularly in the Hispanic culture in Texas, you often find multiple generations in the same household. So no matter what topic community health workers are often giving education, working with people on, there's older adults in the home. So it's a very good venue to work with older adults, and they're generally trusted by older adults. So the result was, since they're a natural avenue to help adults prevent and reduce falls or injuries, we did a national and states. We started with statewide, and there are no certified fall prevention curriculum specifically for community health workers in Texas, and then we expanded the search to nationwide. Now, we're not saying there isn't one, but we couldn't find one specifically for community health workers. And as a result, we decided to develop a community health worker evidence-based fall prevention curriculum. So just briefly, I'm going to talk about kind of the process for how we developed it. So we researched current curricula, the STEADY tool, CDC, different curricula. The National Council on Aging has a very good curriculum. And then we identified best practice strategies to incorporate in a curriculum. We outlined key concepts that we felt were important for community health workers to know. We brainstormed those concepts in curriculum outline with a group of CHWs. And so to give you an example, so fall prevention, we those working in that field know what fall prevention is. But we thought, well, do community health workers in Texas, do they know what that means? So we started talking with them, and I had a focus group, and I said, okay, when you hear the word fall prevention, what do you think about? Or how would you talk to someone in your community about fall prevention? And I got a lot of blank stares, and one responded, well, I guess we buy them a walker. And that was, I mean, that was legitimately their perception or the information they knew about fall prevention. And the other one was, well, we'd call the church and see what they could help us in terms of fall prevention. So it was really interesting. We found that the more we talked to community health workers about fall prevention, they didn't have a lot of information or in their tool belt to really reduce and prevent falls among seniors. So we brainstorm concepts with community health workers. We incorporated ideas and the words that community health workers use in their communities into the curriculum development. We involved a core group of certified community health workers and instructors in the actual development. So it wasn't us the experts in the different strategies that we used. It was together. We sat down at the table and together developed it with community health workers and community health workers instructors. Content experts reviewed and revised the curriculum to make sure it was accurate information that we were giving out. And then we pilot tested the curriculum in an in-person live training with community health workers, and then we refined it and revised it based on the feedback, and then we're working on the dissemination curriculum through in-person online trainings. So because I only have a very limited amount of time, the best practice models that we use were really the different types of training of CHWs and adult learning theory and message tailoring. But I'm going to focus a little bit more today on the message tailoring because we're talking about bridging the communication gap. And again, the purpose of this curriculum was that the community health workers receive the training so then to implement that in their content and their own job responsibilities that they have to connect at-risk older adults to the needs that they have regarding fall prevention. So it's a little bit different in the sense that this was not designed, for example, if it was diabetes, then they're going to go, and it's those community health workers specifically working in the diabetes program. The intent really is, as community health workers work in whatever field they are, so it may be chronic disease, it may be in within a school-based setting, it could be in any variety of circumstances, it really was to equip them with this tool and this information on fall prevention that they just can incorporate in their daily routine. So no matter what they're doing, if they're paid, if they're a volunteer, if they work for a hospital, no matter what they're doing, they can take this knowledge and just incorporate it into what they're already doing. So it's a little bit different in that this wasn't, okay, you're working in fall prevention already and then go use this. And that might have been the case, but more often in Texas, we found there were very few community health workers. In fact, we didn't have any at our pilot training that specifically worked just with older adults or with fall prevention. They were working in a lot of other things, but this gave them a tool that they needed to reach the people or older adults. So it's a little bit different than what you might hear in other training programs. So some of the communication strategies, we talked a lot about closed versus open-ended questions. Older adults, if they feel threatened or maybe they just don't have a lot of information or they're fearful, depending on how you phrase the question, you're going to get a lot of yes, no, okay, or they may get no response at all. So really talking about how do you ask open-ended questions and teaching them that, and then also using observe, record, report. And we want to be very clear on this. So if you're in a physical therapy and you use observe, record, and report, it's more medical, right? So it's a very specific process, and we're talking about how you chart things. When we're talking about ORR with community health workers, it's very participant observation. It's not you're going to report this to a medical doctor. It's more internally, okay, how do you observe in the home when you're visiting with the older adults? What do you observe? Do you observe that they have 14 cats? Do you observe that they have a lot of throw rugs on the ground? Is the lighting dim? Those sorts of things. And then by recording, it's just how do we make notes of this? And then who needs to know this information? Is it their caregiver? Is it their adult children that come in once or twice a week or maybe live with them? Or is there a medical entity or someone that we need to report this information to? And then as far as message tailoring, that's what I'm going to talk more about right now. Excuse me. There it is. Okay, so we incorporated the trans-theoretical model And then once we taught them, because we felt that that was really important. So we're going to tailor a message, and everyone does that, right? We all do that. When I'm talking to my 2-year-old and my 17-year-old, I talk very differently, and my message is, it may be the same message, but the content delivery is very different, right? So in order for us, and promulgators get that, they do that naturally. But how do we then, how do they know what needs to be tailored? Well, how do we know what stage they're in? So we went through the transheretical model and incorporated that into the actual training so that they can be aware, okay, I'm talking with this person using open-ended questions, and they're in the stage of denial, or they're in contemplation, or they're actually doing some steps to do this. So it was really training them in how to use the model to identify what stage they're in and then to tailor their messages. So the steps of tailoring, identifying their audience and their characteristics, and then the key information that they need to address for fall prevention, and then developing those messages. So it's really identifying the audience, what's the key information, and then developing those audience based on those characteristics. Some of the objectives, again, I'm going to kind of skip through those. Well, we'll go back through, but really, we wanted to explain the importance of why we need to prevent and reduce, and we touch on the cost-benefit. Increased awareness of fall risk factors inside and outside the home was a major objective of the curriculum, to develop their observation, recording, and communication skills, describe ways to prevent or manage falls, not just, okay, here's how you prevent it, but what happens if they come across an older person that has fallen. And then also another major objective of one of the curriculums was to, how do you develop a fall prevention plan? So, okay, great, we identified risk factors for falls, but then what do you do if someone has a bunch of risk factors? And then explaining and discussing the approaches to changing health behaviors, which brings in the health theory approaches, teaching health and behavior change strategies to community health workers and residents, and then the residents applying those behavior change strategies to fall prevention and reduction. And just as an overview, we developed 3 separate curriculums. Two of them focused on community health workers. There was 2 4-hour sessions. And then the last session was geared more towards instructors. Again, in Texas, that's the way that we have our community health worker certification program. And the focus of the last one for instructors, we really focused on the behavior change theories, and the idea was if we teach instructors on the behavior change theory, then they're going to take that message and we'll have a broader reach and dissemination, which can be applied to any health topic, not just fall prevention, but if we teach them about the stages of change, then that can be applied to multiple public health topics. So as far as dissemination, we've developed it, and we're offering it. So this is a current process. So we've pilot tested it. We've offered it in person in Texas. We are in the process of going live online, and we hope to have that at the first of the year, possibly January, refining that. All of this is in English and Spanish, and so we're working to get the online version go live. And I know I'm going to get this question. So you use adult learning theory and popular education empowerment approaches, so how on earth are you going to teach that online setting? And I know it seems kind of contrary, but we are including ways to make it more engaging in an online setting, which is a big challenge. And I don't know if any of y'all have attended community health worker sessions, but that's been a lot of the focus, is knowing that we have to embrace technology, but we also know that in-person training for community health workers is the best approach. So how do you merge the two? Well, in Texas, we have 254 counties. 200 of those counties have more cows than people. It's just the reality. And so then what do? So we needed to develop this online in order to get the dissemination out that we needed. So just as a side, we did incorporate different ways in the online, such as instead of doing a role play on doing an assessment in class that we would do in inline, well, they actually go and do the assessment as part of their online class. So they watch some information, and they stop, and they're supposed to go do an assessment, and then they post their results to the discussion board, or we'll ask them, how did this part go? What did you find for this? And so we still try to engage them using adult learning theory and the online approach. And then after we developed it here, North Carolina is adapting it for their particular population for dissemination for in-person training. And again, this will be made available nationally in an online format, hopefully come January, February. And our conclusions, that tailored curriculum can reach larger populations of older adults through utilizing the community health workers and coined with message tailoring. And again, we actively involved community health workers in all phases of the project, which we felt was really key, and then we used multiple evidence-based practices and strategies. We're doing questions later. References, again, in are listed, and our supporter or funder was the CDC, and again, wanted to acknowledge my colleagues at UNC and Texas A&M. Thank you, and these are people you can contact if you have more questions.
Okay. Well, before we take questions, I would like to thank again members of the panel for sharing their experiences and their projects. Okay, thank you very much, and thank you also to everyone who stuck around. Okay, so we'll take questions now. Yes.
So let me
repeat the question. If you want to come over. Yeah. Yes, so the question is about three examples of three behavior changes that you tried to influence.
Yeah. Right, so one of those, for example, would be the risk factors, right? So it's identifying those risk factors. So, for example, items in the home, we have an assessment that we walk them through. How do you do a fall prevention assessment in the home? What are those risk factors? So it's really more detailed in the curriculum. Home assessment is one of them. We have a medication assessment that we work on. I'm trying to think through the curriculum. It's a 260-page curriculum. But with that said, it's actually designed so that someone can pick that up and who has never done anything in terms of fall prevention, and it has all the tips and it's very inclusive in all the resources. So it has a medical assessment in there, prescriptions, medication, as a fall risk assessment. It has a cognitive impairment assessment in there as well. It really covers what you would expect in any fall prevention curriculum. And if you have more questions, I'd be glad to share and go into more depth. Yes. So we use STEADY, and then we also use the National Counseling on Aging curriculum as well. And then just real quick, I have some cards in the back, and it's a lot more technological savvy than me, so it has that cute little thing I think you use a phone for, and it takes you right to it. This is our, I don't even know what this is called, but I'm excited because other people do know. And so you can scan this with your smartphone, and it takes you to our National Community Health Worker Training Center where you can access the fall prevention information, and then on there we can also take you to our experts on aging and our colleagues in North Carolina as well. It's going to go live hopefully January. We're in the final refinement stages. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Yes. Question.
My question is for Otis.
Otis. Yeah,
go ahead.
So we did discuss. Go ahead. I apologize. No. So we did discuss it a little bit, but location was really not a primary discussion. We wanted to know if they would even be open to using it in general. But it was my idea that this would be more of a public resource, seeing that people have less access through the home, like through broadband and so forth, that this would be more of a public resource that could be placed maybe I work primarily also, I didn't mention this, with the faith-based community to do this. This is faith-based work. So maybe having the resource in the church or in maybe a more private area, like maybe within a mall, or there were a lot of other suggestions with where this resource could go. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Online is the keywords that you put in, and then the
combination of keywords and then actually getting the source you want. Have you done any training about keywords to access PubMed, to access your area that you were teaching them about? It seems to be so critical in getting good information then.
I do agree that this is very critical, but in my case, I'm working collaboratively with the community to develop something for them. I'm not teaching them in this case how to go onto the internet to find information, because that's very complicated in a way. So I agree that this could make them, you know, increase their self-efficacy to later on maybe go to search for more information using a technology-based resource. But I'm starting, like, very simple in this case and developing a tailored intervention.
We don't really use PubMed. Medline Plus is different from Medline.
Yes, I understand.
All right. And so, in our training, the three lesson series, we don't really involve or we don't really touch upon what keywords to enter and all that, except to really use features, like if they want specific topic information, let's say on colonoscopy, like where go to Medline Plus and then how do you then find information on colonoscopy within Medline Plus.
So in your research, yeah, there's different things that appeal to the younger population and the older population in regards to social media and technology. Have any of you come across specific successful intervention strategies for the older population? You know, do they like modules? Do they like seminars? Do they like games? You know, what is it that will make them successful?
I think primarily before this point in time, this is my really first time using this type of technologies. Before, we used to do in-person seminars. The only technology we really incorporated into these interventions was, I don't know if you guys are familiar with PhotoVoice. It's a qualitative methodology. So we had used PhotoVoice previously and were very successful with that. But all of those prior methods were successful. So I'm actually new to the use of technology with this population. But it's worked well so far, all of them. And different people have different, you know, likes, whether they're younger or older. Everybody has a different preference.
In my experience, you know, working with faith-based organizations and have conducted several focus groups with how they are getting their health information, you know, specifically colon cancer, these individuals are saying if someone else in their network is using social media, hey, then I'm going to get on it because they feel like I'm behind. Like, for instance, Facebook. There's several individuals that have said, like in one particular church, that said, well, when Sister such and such decided to sign up, then I guess I'll sign up because it's safe. You know, several people also say that, hey, you know, before, if I don't really know anyone, it's kind of a little bit scary. But when others are joining,
When it comes to our project, those who have participated, really their experience when it comes to using computers and also the internet just varies. Yeah, but what surprises is some don't even have computers, but they use the computer center that's available in the senior center. And of all of the participants, only one has attended and brought her iPad. So again, in terms of sadness, it just ranges. But one thing that they've said about our lessons is that I guess they go to the senior centers to socialize, and
yes,
then some
yes.
senior centers also offer computer classes, but not necessarily hands-on. And so they'll say after the first lesson, wow, I've learned more about computers, like attending this lesson than all of the lessons, classes I've attended at the senior center. I think it's the hands-on nature, like we force them, here's the computer, now don't be afraid to touch it and all that.
And also something I forgot to say is if there's specifically like a get online and for myself find information. I just wanted to add to the Bedline Club project, in addition to the hands-on session, computer session, we had a student facilitator each senior pretty much for immediate feedback, and we felt that that was a very important connection to, in addition to the instructor, to somebody personally assisting in the writing immediate feedback.
That's where the pharmacy students came in very beneficial. It's almost like a one-to-one. I'm teaching, and then they're there for specific questions.
I would be really interested to follow up with you in a year or two to see how your project turns out. But it's one of the things that I'm wondering about, and having been, you know, right there in the sandwich generation, advocating for my parents and my in-laws and, you know, also my children, and I see that there are very different ways in which we all consume information on the internet. And what would be really lovely to see would be some internet sites, while Medline Plus is great, that are tailored towards older adults and their communication needs, because even the way that they learn, vocalize and so forth, is very different from what our children are doing in the classroom today, from what we did. I would really love to see us, when we're talking about tailoring our internet, also tailoring the internet, I mean, even just the sites. I mean, now all the federal sites, you have a little icon to make the words bigger, but, you know, what my children can read, what I can read, what I can read, what my mother can read, are very different. So I'd be really interested to see how that kind of turns out.
I have a question for you. Are you, you're still holding classes, interacting with somehow, like how often, and are you still getting the same numbers now, or has that increased?
Yes, when we started this project, we were going to 4 senior centers each week, but we cut down on that, and also availability of students to help us out. Not as frequent as we used to, but we still are getting the audience, getting participants. Yes, but it all depends upon the senior center, we think. Yes, senior center director, how committed they are to providing services for their clientele. Yeah, but we've also gotten a request from a faith-based organization, in which was interesting. Yeah, we had this lady who attended one of our lessons at a senior center, and then she asked us, can you come to my church and do this? And we had 8 or 9 people attend. Yeah, which is nice. Yeah. And with additional funding, we were able to get 5 more laptops. So now we have a 10 laptop mobile computer classroom. Yeah. Thank you. Are there other questions?
I just wanted to say thank you because, you know, we're trying to make this leap for this older group. And my mother had a very specific procedure for her cancer, and yeah. I researched it extensively, but I wanted her to understand it. And so she came for caregiving and go through the procedure to my house.
Yeah.
So I would get this, and then I'd say, okay, Mom, come in and sit in this comfortable chair. I'm going to show you something. And then we would look online, and I said, and I have checked this website, and it's a very reliable website,
right.
And I would explain to her.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, after she was there for several months, she said, Valerie, will you go in and look up such and such?
Yes.
Yes. So I appreciate the librarian, because it's really another unbelievable library of stuff.
Yes.
That they don't quite understand search words and all of the platforms and the digital technology.
Yeah.
And yet it's so critical once they start. I love the picture that you had of the 4 seniors, whoever had it, huddled together. How many seniors? I think so many seniors that want to understand it, but then it becomes computer. They don't understand computer, platform, digital technology, then the library, then the information, then how to search for it, and how it's credible. I appreciate
credibility,
because I do this with my students. When they look for websites, I said, here are your criteria.
Uh-huh.
The same criteria.
Yes.
And it's an extraordinary thing. And so thank you for having this session. Thank you for presenting all your papers, because we've got to help this older generation make that leap. They're so interested, even if we all do it as adult children, for our parents. We've got to help them do it, and then you're going to do it mass-wise, so go for it. And the churches are a great place because they trust.
Yeah.
So much trust is there.
I always feature Irina's mother when we make these presentations, because Irina's mother didn't know about computers, but she attended this 3-lesson series, and now she has a computer. She sends emails and searches the internet, and so yeah, it's nice. And that aspect of the lessons where they, because we ask them to put, like, when, before we start a lesson, so what medical condition have you been interested and curious about, but have never gotten the information you want, or what drugs or supplements. So we go through the lessons first, and then we then give them time to look for those, search for those topics, specific topics of personal interest to them.
And not just to actually become health literate.
Right. Yeah. And that's the beauty about Medline Plus. It's so easy to use, plain language. Yeah. Right. Well, thank you very much again for sitting and attending this session. Thank you.